This is the Web Weekly, episode 13 for October 15th, 2010, Ultra Mode. In this week's episode, Being Yourself in Marketing, Opera, What's Up With You, and coming soon to a TV near you, the Internet. Welcome to the Web Weekly, the podcast for all things web. My name is Jonas Flint, and joining me today, as usual, is Who Cut the Cheese, Kevin Dees. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, cheese. Jeez Louise, is that Dees cheese? Oh, come on, man. I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Good. So,
anything interesting happening other than the new Skype, Facebook thing?
I haven't played with it yet, have you?
I downloaded it onto Windows 7, and I tried getting the Facebook going, and it just kind of stalled on me a little bit. So
I tried downloading it this morning, and it stopped mid-download, and it kept looping over and over and over again. And that was 4 in the morning when I got up. So, yes, I actually get up at 4 in the morning. What are you doing at 4 in the morning, Kevin?
Well, usually at 4 in the morning, I'm dreaming. And that's about it.
Oh, okay.
Maybe snoring every once in a while, but yeah.
Anybody in particular?
Huh?
Anybody in particular?
That I'm dreaming about?
Yeah.
I normally dream about code.
Right. You're such a nerd.
Yeah. I think today it was... I did wake up thinking about code this morning. So I think it was... I want to say JavaScript this morning, so...
Nice.
Yeah.
So you didn't get to play around with Skype 5?
No, not really.
You didn't install it?
In fact, I don't have a webcam on my desktop. So couldn't really do anything with the new Skype.
I got a message from you saying, playing around with Skype 5 or something like
that.
Yeah,
I sent you a Skype message like, I'm using the new Skype. Let's check it out. And then after I sent it, I was like, oh, crap. I don't have a webcam.
Yeah, that computer.
So it was like, eh.
The computer that you that I had received that message from is my secondary computer at home, and I'm waiting for the video card of my other computer to come back in. You know, Sapphire, my video card went bad the month on the warranty expiration. On the nose, I got lucky.
Yeah.
So I sent it into them, and did my RMA, and they're like, well, we'll just send you a new updated version of it.
Yeah, that's what they normally do. Is
yeah, they just send
closer because those things go out of, you know, whatever the quality are. They go out of line pretty quickly as far as the models go, and so you can get a brand new.
Yeah,
I've sent in my laptop several times, and they've been like, "Well, we're gonna have to throw this new equipment in there." I'm like, "Yeah, go ahead, do it. I'm not complaining."
Covered under warranty, it's free. It was a $300 video card when I bought it.
Yeah.
You know, I looked it up now. It's about $150. That was 2 years ago I bought it.
Imagine.
It's amazing, deflation. You know, how things...
Yeah, as far as technology gets old fast, man.
Yeah.
Fast. So,
still a good video card. It'll still run everything, all the game settings on high.
Yeah. On your ultra modes.
Yeah, my ultra modes.
They call it ultra mode. It just seems very... gamey to call it ultra mode.
Ultra mode, you gotta have it.
If you're not running in ultra mode, you're not legit, man.
You gotta have gaming lingo. I so need to do a gaming podcast. I think it'll just fit.
Whatever happened to high quality? They skip it. What is it called now? I think they have safe mode. They have
what game?
They call it performance recommended, and then high quality, and then this ultra mode.
Right.
It's no more low, medium, high, and extra high, you know?
You got to throw the the verbiage in there to make it sound so.
It's cooler that way.
Make it sound marketable and exciting.
Yes, it is exciting. Ultra Mode. Well, that's the name for the podcast today is Ultra Mode.
Ultra Mode.
Ultra Mode. All right, you have quick links. You found some. Let's dig.
I have a nice set amount of quick links, as do you, Kevin. Seems like you've been pretty busy with the link collecting yourself.
In fact, we're planning on doing this podcast for 2 hours today, so stay tuned. No,
yeah,
I'm just
right.
kidding. Yeah. Don't think I have time for that. But what's your first quick link, Jonas? I guess we'll just rotate through since we have quite a few.
Okay, my first quick link is on Smashing Magazine. It's
Smashing to the Magazine again.
And I'm
I tell you, they're perfect for web design stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Of course
stuff.
They are web design tutorial place.
This is like a CSS...
Holy crap.
Hub article.
50?
50 new useful CSS techniques tutorials. 50. Into 50.
50.
Yeah, not 5. Not 500. Jeez. 50.
I'm looking at you. Just looking at these, it's like.
And it's filled.
Some of them we've covered on the show, some of them we haven't. So this is a good. It just vouches that we've already had some of these things on the show. So this is a good list, just from what I can.
Yeah.
I think it had Ethan Marcotte's. Responsive design. It has your horizontal
diagonal sprites. It has all kinds of stuff.
That's very cool.
You know, from layout, there's
HTML.
HTML5 boilerplate. Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a hub of links that you can go to learn some CSS techniques. Some of them you'll already know. Some of them will be new. You never know unless you check out the link, right?
Yep.
So that is my first quick link, and Kevin, grace us with your first.
Well, mine comes from Tantic.com, and Tantic is pretty stinking awesome developer. He's worked with the IE team. He's worked with several other groups, including the W3C over time.
Man, what did he did something that was
yeah,
Tantic's.
the chassis or whatever thing that we were talking about at one point. He had started that so you could run like PHP and JavaScript on the server.
But no, I want to say that he did something.
He's been one that's he's come up with a ton of CSS hacks and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
he's been on the leading edge of that.
Tantic's IE like the star HTML hack. I think he was the main go to guy for that for a while.
Well, he's the main go to guy for a lot of these things. So his. He posted a little article on his site. It says, Facebook is using HTML5 now, and you can too. So basically, he goes through and he points to several articles where he's basically saying what you said last week, I believe, where they were taking this guy from the W3C out of context, or maybe he was speaking ideally. He's not putting words in the guy's mouth. He's just quoting them from the quotes he got from other sites. But basically, he goes on to talk about how other sites are using HTML5, and Facebook happens to be one of them. And he said, David Ricardon? I don't know.
Does Facebook have just a plain HTML5 doc type?
No, I actually checked. Basically, there's been an article linked to on Tantic's site. If you go to Tantic's site, you'll get an article to that link, and basically they tell you what they're using HTML5 on, which is like touch.facebook.com. They're also using geolocation. So they're talking about a few things on here, not specifically HTML5.
Facebook. Yeah, not the main specification. Facebook page, right.
Right, but he's saying they're using HTML5 video for a few things, using H.264, and a bunch of other stuff. Web storage they're using, web sockets they're using, so definitely worth checking out Tantic's latest article, and that'll be in the show notes. And so this just goes to show that HTML5 is now. In fact, I've been telling you that HTML5, all you have to do is add in the change your doc type, and it's HTML5.
Yeah.
Which is normally the case. But there are actually a few things that you have to, like, for validation anyways, that you have to have for it to be a valid HTML5 document. But I guess we can cover that some other time. But just change your doc type. You know?
Yeah, right.
So, anyways.
Or. You're going to.
Web hell.
Right.
That's my slogan. That's my slogan.
Right, change your doc type.
All right.
Awesome.
What do we got next?
I stumbled onto a link. I admit I didn't read the entire article, but it's still, I think it will be a pretty useful link. It's RESTful CSS.
RESTful?
RESTful CSS.
What is RESTful?
Well, basically, he's proposing a new method for organizing CSS.
Okay.
To model it after your traditional frameworks. Well, I say traditional, but traditional server-side frameworks such as CodeIgniter, CakePHP.
So you're talking about Core. RESTful architecture and MVC kind of architecture.
Right.
Okay.
Admittedly, I didn't really get into the...
It looks like a good article, though.
Yeah, get into the code.
I'll definitely have to check this one out.
But
so this
he
is
has
RESTful
all kinds of
CSS?
Little, yeah, charts and graphs and code examples. And it will be a pretty... I think it'll be a pretty interesting resource, if anything.
Yeah. RESTful is becoming a hot topic, too, here lately. You know?
The reason why, in fact, that's why the article actually grabbed me, is because you hear, you know, you just went to the...
RESTfest.
Yeah, the RESTfest.
Then we just had Ben on the show, Benjamin Young. So
yeah, RESTful has been...
He talked about Couch and how that uses a little bit of REST.
Has been big talk lately, so, you know.
Yep.
But when I saw RESTful CSS, I had to check it out. So,
yeah. Now I have a question for you.
That'll be in our show notes.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Have you ever participated in Blue Beanie Day?
I have not.
You have not. Why not?
Because I'm not a Zeldman fanboy.
This has nothing to do with Zeldman.
Listen.
This has nothing to. Well, actually,
yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
It does. It's
you're actually
Zeldman
right.
Fanboys. I like Zeldman. I respect his work. I think he's. He knows his stuff, but I'm not a fanboy, you know?
Yeah. It has to do with Zeldman wore the blue beanie in his book.
In his book, yeah.
And so he used that book to promote web standards. So Blue Beanie Day is about web standards. It's not about Zeldman.
Zeldman worship, man.
all right. Whatever. Whatever. It's to me, Blue Beanie Day is all about web standards, not about Zeldman. It just happens to be that... He wore the iconic blue beanie in that book.
You know,
and so it just happened to catch on that folks would wear a blue beanie on the 4th of, or not the 4th, but the 30th of November. And this is my quick link,
so
by
now,
the way.
So now you, I
it's
guess
Zeldman.com.
You can get together with a bunch of guys in a room and your blue beanies and all give high fives and talk about Zeldman.
Normally what folks do is they'll just change their avatar.
Give each other thumbs up.
Yeah. You'll change your avatar. You'll put a blue beanie on it. That's a PSD that's usually linked to on Zeldman's site. And this is the fourth time they've done it. I guess you could kind of say it's a Zeldman fanboy kind of thing to do, but... If you want to do something goofy for a day, just to show your geekiness, wear a blue beanie on November 30th as to show your support for web standards.
Well, if you buy me a blue beanie, I'll wear it. You know?
I bet you if I bought you a blue beanie, you would not wear it on the 30th of November.
I might, but not probably out of Zeldman worship.
This isn't Zeldman worship, but... This is like
bow before your Zeldman.
No, this is like dressing up for Halloween, man.
Yeah,
but whatever. If you can wear it for different reasons, and somebody may wear it because they love Zeldman for some odd reason. I don't.
You remember?
He's just a man. He's just a man.
You know what this reminds me of? You know Jim C. Jim Ciella, Orange Coat.
Yeah,
it's a local web design company here. Jim gave me a lot of tips with Drupal, and we were talking one
Jim's
day.
Jim's a Drupal god, by the way.
Yeah, he knows his Drupal stuff.
I think we need to have a Jim day with Drupal hats.
Drupal, you know how WordPress and Drupal, they both have their camps. They're like conferences. I think WordPress, what is WordPress called? WordCamp or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And Drupal has...
I should call it the Spelling Bee WordCamp.
Right.
I don't know.
Drupal has their their camps also. They have their little get-togethers in local camps. And I go, we really need to – I said, I think it would be interesting if we did a Drupal
– DrupalCon here.
Yeah, a Drupal
conference. And people dressed up like their Drupal
because
sites.
I legitimately wanted to learn some stuff. I had some questions and some issues that I had.
Yeah.
That I would like to have connected with somebody that could have given me some help, or maybe I could have shared a tip somewhere. But
yeah, well, it sounds more to me like you just need to go to lunch with Jim and, that, and Mike.
You know what? That's actually what he said. He said, "You know, what are we going to do at this? What are we going to all wear the Drupal hat and give each other high fives and say, go Drupal?"
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he goes, I never understood those.
Yeah.
He made me feel about this small when he said it. I was like, okay. Yeah, I felt kind of cheesy.
He goes,
I would much rather just go. He goes, I tell you what, buy me lunch, bring your laptop, and I'll show you how to create modules and do this. And
sounds
do that.
Like a coffee underground.
Yeah, yeah. And after he said it, honestly, I think that is probably the way to do it. I've never been to a Drupal conference. I probably would go to one if there was one, but I saw his point. That's what that Blue Beanie thing reminded me of.
In other words, instead of going to conferences, just invite a web designer that you respect to lunch.
Right.
You know.
I mean, not all the time. But,
all the time.
On Blue Beanie days, that's where our Blue Beanies give each other high fives and say, go Zeldman.
Yeah, whatever. It's not about Zeldman, man.
Right, it's about his hat.
There you go.
All right.
All right, what's your quick link, man? You drew that out.
Okay, my quick link is on Mashable. Mashable, there seems to be a
lot. Is it down this time? No.
Ooh, you scared me for a second.
So this is under the Mashable Dev and Design.
Good article here. It's short. It's sweet. It's to the point. Top 5 developer questions about HTML5 answered.
Another HTML5 article?
Yeah. But this
really, that's all we're going to be talking about for the next 2 years.
It's a hot topic for the next 2 years.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I mean, that's we're going to it, you know. We're going to HTML5. But basically,
my next one's on HTML5 as well, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so well, go ahead.
This article was a very practical article for me. The 5 questions, since there's only 5, I'll go ahead and rattle them out. First question is, what is HTML5? And he really explains it in a very practical way. Can I use HTML5 even if users have outdated browsers?
Yes.
What should designers and developers learn first? Am I behind the times if I don't use HTML5?
Yes.
And his question is, no, you're not.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
He's very practical. He says...
I disagree with him then. All right, next question.
Well, you'll read the article and you'll see what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
But I really don't think that people...
I personally believe you're behind the times if you're not using HTML5, but whatever.
Oh, right. Well, are you
Send me hate mail, people. Send me hate mail.
Are you using CSS3?
Yeah.
You're using it right now. Mm-hmm. Even a browser doesn't support it.
Yeah.
For every project you do.
Yeah. I use CSS3 and HTML5 for everything. It just happens to be that some of these browsers don't get the cool effects.
Wow. Okay.
What? It looks fine in the other browsers. They just don't get, like, transparency and stuff. What's the problem with that? Yeah, there's no problem with that.
Right. And there's no problem with them not using it if it's not.
Right. There's no problem with not using it, but they're behind the times if they're not.
And what's
Send
Adobe's...
me your hate mail. Send me your hate mail.
What's Adobe's stance on HTML5? Let's see.
Here come the crickets.
Yeah, here he goes.
We need a cricket thing. A little cricket audio play.
No. I understand. Read the article.
Okay.
You know, you're kind of disagreeing. You're disagreeing with him without...
I'm disagreeing with his title. And I haven't read the paragraph, so...
Well, he said, am I behind the times? That's the title. What do you disagree about that?
Yeah.
With about that?
I don't know.
Awesome.
All right,
anyway,
but yeah,
it
looks
Mashable.
Like a good article.
Yeah. Top 5 developer questions about HTML5. It's not an article just for designers and developers, but it's for anybody that, you know, anybody on the web.
Project managers, marketers, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Very cool. Good find, good find.
Awesome. So and what's then, your next?
Yep. Mine is Jeremy Keith. His article, he just recently put up one called Speaking and Moving.
So what color is his beanie?
His beanie? I couldn't tell you, bro. I couldn't tell you. My assumption is it's either blue.
The red beanie. We're going to wear.
Or red, yeah.
So we'll have Red Beanie Day in honor of Jeremy Keith.
Yeah. Anyways, Jeremy Keith, you know, posts stuff he's doing. Sort of, he keeps it basically a journal. He doesn't call it a blog. He calls it a journal because that's what it is. That's what Jeremy Keith does. He keeps records of what it does and what he's thinking for himself.
Right.
As a record. He doesn't allow comments on his site, for instance. But he was just at Front Enders. It's a conference. And he has a video on Vimeo that was pretty good. It's about an hour long. So if you have a little bit of time, but basically he tells you what HTML5 is and how to apply it now and all kinds of great stuff. And he also has a little bit of text on here if you don't feel like reading the whole thing. And it's also video and audio. Really good find. I was impressed. I listened to about the first 20 minutes of it. And as usual, Jeremy Keith was stunning.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. I like Jeremy Keith's stuff. He's very real world about things. That's what I like about him. He's practical. All right, my next one is another Mashable article.
Mashable. You are a Mashable lover.
Yeah, Mashable's knocking it out of the park. Who was the creator and founder of CSS? Kevin?
I can't recall his name. I used to know it.
There it is. I'll let you cheat.
I can't even say his name.
Hockham William Lee.
Okay, Hockham. That's right.
Hockham. Yeah. I don't know where he's from. Or he has some accent, German maybe.
Yeah.
Sweden. He works for Opera. He's a CTO for Opera.
Yeah.
Currently, and he's talking about the visual future of CSS and some of the new features that are coming to CSS 3. He talks a little bit about, you know, the W3C and the process and how you can actually get involved in features that will be implemented in CSS. It was pretty interesting. It was a pretty interesting watch. It's only 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's a good little video clip. Get a chance, check that out.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and throw in two quick links here.
Okay.
These are kind of short. First, the beloved Stack Overflow has had their 1,000,000th question in the last week, I believe, October 12th, yes. And if you check out their latest blog article about it, you can watch some cool unicorns. And it shows you some stuff, but the unicorns are pretty legit. Well, I don't know. And then the other one, that was kind of a side note.
Right.
It's like, hey, look at this. That was really loud. Hey, but I'm sorry about the ears. But then we have the developer network on Yahoo, and basically the stats are out here for how many users have JavaScript disabled. And so it kind of gives you some graphs and charts and stuff.
So what were the numbers here? I'm curious.
Brazil, 0.26.
Disabled.
The U.S., disabled.
0.26.
JavaScript disabled. And then in the U.S., 2.06. U.K., 1.29. France, 1.46. And Spain, 1.28.
Wow.
Disabled JavaScript. So if your site relies on JavaScript, you'll lose 2% of your potential customers.
An average
visitors.
Of.
Yep.
Almost an average of, which is,
if you're Google, it's big. Because Google, what is Google's?
Yeah.
$1 billion per percentile of market share in their search.
Yeah.
So if they didn't work for people who didn't have JavaScript enabled, they would lose potentially $2 billion. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yep.
But for the little sites that we do.
For the little sites we do, basically 2%. JavaScript, you can use it and do some pretty cool stuff with it. I wouldn't make your site dependent on it, though.
Well, yeah.
But
I mean, there's some common sense. I mean, gracefully. That's why there's graceful degradation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's why you gracefully.
And progressive enhancement and all these. Graceful degradation, progressive enhancement, kind of the same thing. Just a different perspective. Kind of the cup's half empty, half full kind of thing. So, all right. Do you have any more?
No, that's all mine.
All right. Well, I showed you this. Why don't you, this ultimate ultra mode
right,
CSS gradient generator. Basically, you, like in Photoshop, you go in, you select, they have a palette, some presets that you can choose from for gradients, and it'll give you code. So, and you can create different pinpoints on your gradient and everything. Add colors, take them away, do all kinds of cool stuff. You can set your stops and all that in CSS3 for Mozilla, WebKit, and IE. So you can do gradients with IE without creating images and that kind of thing. But the only thing with IE is...
It uses the filters,
and also you can't have multiple stop points in between.
Yeah.
It's end and begin, and you can do horizontal and vertical. It's still pretty legit. Like, if you want to add a gradient into, say, a button on IE, you can do that and not have to do an image.
Yeah, it's an interesting find. I wonder if that button right there is done.
No, that's a Ubuntu button, bud.
Oh.
Yeah. You're just not used to seeing that. But you can find this at colorzilla.com/gradient-editor. And it's pretty legit. Pretty legit.
Colorzilla, are they the same people that do the Mozilla add-on? Colorzilla add-on?
I'm pretty sure. Colorzilla. Yep, they are. So if you go to colorzilla.com, you can check that out. And then they have that gradient one. I don't know how that gradient, long that gradient thing's been around, but I just ran into it the other day, and it's pretty cool. So
I've been using that
link to
that
it.
Plugin for quite
yeah,
some
the
time.
Plugin is great. I love that Firefox plugin.
Yeah, it's a good little plugin.
So I believe those are the quick links for today.
Awesome. And as usual, that'll be posted on our show notes. So
yep.
Check that out.
Yep. Alrighty.
Cool. So Boag strikes again.
Boag world. Yep. So Boag is basically talking about, and I found this article. It seemed pretty good. It's a lengthy article, so you have to have some patience and nerve to get through this thing. But basically, the title of it is, "What Does Your Site Say About Your Organization's Personality?" So basically, what is that persona or that perception that you're giving your customers when they come to your site? And he comes in and he talks about, as I assume, every little aspect of it, you know. Whether you're being corporate or being fun, he uses examples from like Flickr in here. Recognize that your organization is made up of people, you know, that kind of thing. So he talks about first impressions count. So what do you say on this? What do you say the importance of building personality into your website? Is it that important, or can we just all be generic?
Again, I think it depends on the website again, the context of it. For a company website, yeah, I see his point. I think it's a great article.
Yeah. This comes down to what Aaron Walter talks about, is this emotional design with this product MailChimp that he works with, you know, where it's the monkey's arm gets ripped off, you know. It's a certain personality, you know, the monkey cracking jokes at you when you come on. Some people like that and some people don't.
You know, speaking of MailChimp, this week I had set up a client of mine on MailChimp and we were browsing around on it and the chimp said something like, "Hey, Randy, monkey around with me," or something like that, or "stop monkeying around," or something like that.
Yeah.
We read it and we just both kind of chuckled. We looked at it and we just kind of shook our head. And so I can see the point to that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's room for some humor. We're human beings. We're not machines. And a thing that I really liked about this article was when he talked about overcoming, you know, your corporate inferiority complex. Smaller companies, they have this tendency to want to make themselves appear to be this large company.
Right. Corporate engine. It has a lot to do with the turnkey revolution and the industrial revolution kind of coming in together, you know, where it's you establish this process and you can plug any client into it and it puts out money for them or whatever the benefit is that they want at the end. You know, if it's, you know, a really nice pie and you're a bakery shop, you know, that's the product at the end of the chain. You know?
Right.
And I think this is a shift in these sites wanting to this. This is a shift from us going from industrial turnkey kind of site where it's about the product and more towards the emotional and social side of it. You know, talk about the effects of Facebook and that the effects that that's had on our culture and the way we interact with people and the way we keep up with folks.
Well,
you know, it's this relational bit that's coming in.
Sorry about that.
Wow. Choke on something?
Choke on something, man. I'm
I thought you were about to puke all over my computer, man.
Your words make me gag, Kevin. Wow. Okay, I'm
that
okay.
That was random, man.
Yeah. So what you were saying?
Yeah. But basically, we're moving towards this social interaction, and companies have basically said, "Hey, people want this emotional response, this social collaboration," and so they're jumping on Facebook, they're jumping on Twitter, and they're trying to build relationships with customers, and that. It's time consuming. That takes a lot of time.
Well,
and so making your site reflect that kind of maybe take away the burden. Who knows? What do you think?
Well, I think first off, what I was saying before was, you know, you have smaller companies that are trying to make themselves bigger than what they seem. You know, even freelancers and as web designers, I know. I feel like I'm a gagging, huh?
Yeah.
That was weird.
That was weird.
Anyway.
I'm over here. I have the dumbest smile on my face because Jonas just like out of nowhere, his face all scrunched up, and he looked like he was spitting out a huge chunk of bubble gum, and nothing came out of his mouth. That was just hilarious.
Yeah, I seriously gagged on something. Hence the water. You notice I'm not doing the juice thing. I'm doing the water thing. Water.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. I'm just totally distracted right now.
No problem. Anyway. You know, even freelancers at one point in time, when I started especially, they would make themselves seem bigger than they are. You know, they wanted to give themselves this big company name and, you know, make it appear like they're more than one person when they're really some guy in their you know, home office. You know, they're one guy with two computers, a home office, and a printer, you know, and a web browser, and that's what they're armed with in their software, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at their website, you would think that there's some Fortune 500 million dollar company. And I think we, as a people, as an internet connected people, I think we're over that. I think that we're more accepting of the home worker, of the smaller guy. The smaller guy is more.
I would also say, and I don't mean to interrupt you here, but that people are sick and tired of fake.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, we're tired of that stock photo where everybody's happy and smiley. Yes, that makes you feel comfortable, but I think people are starting to realize that this is fake and it's basically the company BSing me to get an emotional response out of me showing these smiley, perfect people. Like, I have better responses from sites personally. When I go to a site and it's a real customer on there, you know, they look normal, they're not photoshopped and airbrushed, you know, onto the screen with all these lighting effects. They're just regular people. Like, even in the TV commercials now, like, I've seen tons of these things. Like, Domino's is one of the first ones to start doing this. they started pasting photos in their commercials of what people actually took pictures of their pizzas and sent them, and they showed them real pizza photos on TV and in their Facebook page. You know, it's this genuine movement.
Yeah.
We're seeing, I think.
Yeah, we live in the real world with the real people, and we don't want to deal with anybody but those people. And we deal with companies that have to make money, and we know that these companies have to make money to support the people within the company, right? At the end of the day, it's all about people, right?
Yeah, it's all about people, and next to that, it's all about money.
Yeah, and I think and money only
right
helps people, right? I mean, that's what, well, supposed to help people.
Yeah.
Hurts and helps people, but yeah, I think you know, his suggestions are right on point. Don't pretend to be something you're not, you know, just yeah, I think people appreciate that. You know, you just tell them who you are and what you're about, and, you know, they can either take it or leave it, and they either like it or they won't like it. You know, if they like you and they can use it, they'll get it, right? If they don't like you and they can't use it, you know, or if they don't like you and they can use it, they won't get it, right?
Yeah.
I think if they like you and they can't use it, they might get it. Right?
All right. Playing with words here.
Well, think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, if they like you and you're just a genuine down-to-earth person, you know?
Yeah, I think when it really comes down to it today, to have a successful site, it needs to be professionally genuine. It can't be sloppy and be genuine. It's got to be professionally genuine.
Well, it has to look good, right?
Right. Well, that's not exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying it has to be professional in the way it presents itself and yet be genuine at the same time.
Right.
Meaning,
well, you mean
you can't just be all goofy and stuff. I mean, that's not...
Right.
Unless you're a clown shop. I mean, that's really not going
right.
to work
Nobody's
out so
saying
hot.
Being be ghetto.
Yeah.
Right.
So be professionally genuine. Don't just be genuine. You can't just think that being genuine is going to get you something. You can be the most honest person in the world, and somebody that's a total liar can make a sale above you because you're not professional. It's presentation, and it really does come down to an aesthetic and that professional feel. You know, it can't be cheesy, you know. So that there is a cross that you have to have, you know. How good do these photos need to be? You know, you don't want them to be smiley people, but again, you don't want them to be really crappy photos either.
Well,
you know,
there's nothing wrong with smiley people. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with smiley people, but that is fake, and people see through it. And yes, it looks good, but people see through it, man.
Right.
Awesome. So, anyways. I think that kind of wraps up that topic, unless there's anything you want to add.
No. I think it's a great article. Check it out.
Yeah, definitely a great article. Check out BoagWorld /marketing or BoagWorld.com/marketing/be-yourself. It's pretty good, pretty good. And then you wanted to talk about Opera, and I wanted to talk about this new Google TV stuff that's coming out tomorrow from Sony.
So have you used Opera before, Kevin?
Yeah, I've actually used the Opera as soon as Opera came out on my iPhone. Got it. Man, I was refreshing the App Store every 30 freaking seconds. Because when that app came out, I lived in the boonies.
You're talking about Opera Mobile.
Opera Mobile for the iPhone, right. And so when that came out for the iPhone, man, I was totally stoked because I had terrible bandwidth where I was. Like, I would have a connection, you know, stable for like 10 seconds. So if my webpage didn't load in that time, I kind of had to restart and start over, you know. And hopefully the iPhone would cache it and stuff very well. But it did an okay job. You know, the way that worked was it sends it over to their Turbo servers, it compresses the site, and then sends you the static stuff.
What about the Opera browser?
I have used Opera browser. John Hicks recently redesigned that, and that was really nice in the 10.0 version.
Yeah.
And now they're moving to 11.0.
Yeah, yeah. Opera 11 is coming out with extension support.
Extension support, finally.
Now you're saying
not just plugins, you know, but real extensions for us to develop.
Yeah, the article covers why they actually took so long. You know, with extensions and
is it too late?
Well, how much market share really does Opera have? Honestly, you've used Opera, right?
I'm pretty sure
the browser. You just said you.
I want to say I'm pretty sure the mobile market Opera has dominated, but now that WebKit stuff's coming out, it's kind of shrinking back.
Yeah, I don't think they dominate.
But for the desktop, I don't want to even say they have 1%. I want to say they have like 0.2 or something like that.
Now, have you actually used the browser?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What'd you think? I'm curious. They designed
their browser,
the interface.
Yep.
They had Molly, I think it's Molly Holzenberg, work for them. What's going on with these people? Why hasn't
marketing, man? It all comes down to marketing. And think about this. Okay, Google, right? What is it? 3%? Some 3 or 6%? Some. It's not double digits yet, I don't believe. And this is Google, man. Mm-hmm. And they've had their browser out for quite a while now, and they're stinking Google. And so, and any chance they get, if you use IE and you go to Google, they'll ask you if you want to download Chrome. You know,
right?
If you're using like an older version of IE, and they're still wimping out, you know.
Chrome is and so it's climbing.
Browser market is a tough grab, man.
Right now, it's a tough grab. Sure is. I mean, look at the competition now. Firefox, IE9, you know.
Yeah.
Chrome. I use Chrome.
Yep, I use Chrome as well.
You know, but yeah, I feel like Opera's, they've gotten all the right people and they've done all the right things as far as their browser. Their browser is top notch. But Opera's never, in 6, 7 years, I remember playing around with Opera for the first time when I was still in, you know, still taking classes, web design classes, way before I was a web designer. And they just haven't been able to tear into the market share at all.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that
the mobile market they've been okay with, but this the...
Yeah, the only reason why I haven't picked up and used Opera on a serious level is because of the adoption alone.
Here's the reason I don't use Opera, and I've already said it. Is the development tools. If Opera had awesome development tools, I would use it instantaneously. Like, I would use it if it had better development tools. Because when it comes down to it, I build my sites to support web standards. Any tweaking that has to be made is made afterwards. You know, I tweak it and do whatever has to be done to make it work in the other browsers. But the first thing I do is I optimize that sucker for the best stuff out there, man. And then I'll, you know, go add in the stuff to make it look decent in the other browsers.
Right.
That's how I work. And it, you know, it works just fine for me. And if Opera is one of the best supporters of CSS, there's no reason for me not to be using that as a development platform to know, check, and see how things look. But until they ramp things up, it's not going to happen for me.
Yeah, marketing-wise, ramp things up marketing-wise, because they certainly have ramped things up in terms of innovation.
Right. And really, when it comes to grabbing market share, you get the geeks to hook onto it, and pretty soon tons of people are going to be using it.
But the geeks haven't quite grabbed onto
it. Right. That's why I'm saying, like, they have to have these development tools, and they have to have these add-ons, and they have to push for security. Because you get the geeks to use this stuff, IT professionals are going to start putting it on their clients' computers because it's just going to save them, you know, a buttload of time.
Well, even so, you know, back in my day, you know,
back in the day, back in 2002, when
you know there were
web
no,
standards were non-existent, CSS was
well, no, I mean,
still
web
a weak language,
existed, but developer tools within browsers weren't very common, you know, until Firebug came out, and I can remember when that was brand spanking new.
Yeah,
you know, there wasn't a case for, or there, yeah, there was a case for it, but there wasn't. You didn't see developer tools within the browser very much. You know, and even then, they didn't.
Yeah, it's view source. Text file. There you go.
Yeah, even then, they didn't take off. I don't know. I wish It's a legitimately good browser. I think you probably hit it right on the nail. I mean, you hit the head. You hit the nail on the head.
There you go.
There we go.
I think even last podcast, I said you were treading thin water. I mean, what is that?
Is that what I said?
No, that's what I said. Oh. Treading thin water. It's like you're walking on thin ice and then treading deep water. You know, it's like yeah. I mixed the two up. Come on, man.
You're treading thin water.
Treading thin water.
That means I'll sink.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that either.
I didn't either.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's probably marketing. So there you go, Opera. The reason why your numbers suck is because your marketing sucks.
Your marketing sucks and your development tools suck.
There you go.
But, okay, before I say your development tools suck, they are decent development tools, but they're not the best. And for me to use it, you got to be the best, man. That's, you know, that's just my take.
Awesome, Kevin.
Yep. Basically, I'm not going to date your browser unless you're stinking hot and you have all the moves.
Yeah, be the best and Kevin will grace you with his presence.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, that's not a hard task to do.
So Google TV.
Yep.
Here, there, everywhere. Sony just made an awesome announcement, huh?
Yep, and this, I think this TV's crap is huge. Not necessarily the Google TV alone by itself, but simply all these platforms, Apple TV, the Boxy, you know, all this stuff is coming out.
It's coming.
It's moving
isn't it?
Entertainment back to the couch. The iPad is moving entertainment back to the couch. And as web designers and developers, we need to think about these screen resolutions, and specifically TV, okay? What is it? 1080p. 1080p, right?
Yep.
That's your pixels to work with.
Yep, 1080p.
You know? And so, I'm sitting here thinking, we're building these websites, and still, we still use hover states for tons of stuff. We still have these hover menus. They're not click menus, you know, and click is normally better than hover in most cases, you know. And if you're going to use hover, you need to start thinking about using hover for this extra stuff that's not quite as important, like meta details that you don't have to have on the page if you just have to use hover for something. But also you need to start thinking about active states and stuff. But I don't want to get necessarily hung up on hover because that's really – everybody already knows this. I mean, you're right. Not going to have a daggum cursor. Yeah, well, you will kind of on the Google TV.
Yeah,
but
you're going to be browsing through a remote –
a remote keyboard thing. I looked at this. Yeah. People are saying this is a keyboard, but to me – this keyboard, I'm going to be honest, okay? I have a remote for my TV. I have a remote for my VCR. Then I have just another remote for the sound system, right? That's three remotes. I'm used to that. And I think most people usually have two or three remotes around their house, right?
Right.
You have this one remote that does it all. I don't see why people are getting so banged up about it having a full-fledged keyboard on it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's not like these are like crazy buttons. This is a keyboard. You already know how to use a keyboard. It's nothing to freak out about.
Yeah, I think what people are concerned about is, you know, I'm looking at the picture of the keyboard right now, and it does look, you know, it looks, to me, it looks attractive.
Yeah, it looks legit to me. It looks like you hold it in your hand like a cell phone. The buttons are a little bit bigger, and you punch at it with your thumbs.
Yeah, people are just worried about having to learn how to watch their television. They don't want to. They want to sit back and they just want to be able to flick through and browse. I would, geeks like you and I, you know, we would go nuts on this kind of thing. Yeah. I just subscribe to Netflix and I stream instant movies, you know, through my Wii. The Wii remote is really made quite innovative. You know, quite. Innovatively,
yeah.
Right. It's really quite innovative. There you go.
Yeah.
It sits in your hand just so naturally. You know how your hand will just, you know how it just kind of bends your fingers? When it relaxes, yeah. Your fingers bend and your pointer finger just kind of sticks up.
Mm-hmm.
If you're holding that Wii remote, finger is right on that trigger. Your thumb is right on the button where it's supposed to. You can scroll right through it. It's just very natural. And I scroll through Netflix so easily, up, down, back, forth. It's really, really easy to use. So if they can nail that with this remote, it is like, internet coming to the TV, let's face it, we're going to need something that's going to require user input. It's painful with, that being said, it's painful with the Wii Remote to click on the hand, to click on every single letter to type in words. That's so painful.
The keyboard is perfect for that,
So in that light, I can see where there's a need for a keyboard.
Another reason I also feel like this is just huge is because it's about time the TV had an all-in-one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so sick of... you have to have all this garbage, man. It's like, if I want to watch movies now, I don't have to have a DVD player. I search for it on YouTube, Hulu, Netflix.
It's right on my TV. This spells the end. Well, I'm speculating, but I speculate that this is going to be the end of cable television. If this takes off like it should... Content providers can go directly to and provide their content directly on the internet and eventually do away with their need to go to these cable television networks to distribute their content. Why would they need them?
You're forgetting about premium content, right? And also things like Hulu, you have to pay for those. That's like a Fox thing, right? Hulu's a Fox thing. So you're forgetting that a lot of these places still have control over the distribution. Like Hulu, that's a controlled distribution. That isn't YouTube. And YouTube is limited to the amount of time you can put out there. And so I don't think it's going to kill... These companies are not going to gut themselves. They're going to come up with models that are going to make the money on both ends.
What companies? The content,
the cable companies that supply these things, right?
Well, are they so supplying? Are they supplying
televisions? They're going to end up hooking up with networks and coming out with something. I mean, just to survive, they have to. Either that's going to happen, or you're going to see a large premium come up on data bandwidth. Because if all you're going to be using is internet, you're going to have a higher premium. Speeds are going to boost.
Now that,
however, premiums are going to boost.
That, however, I could see. I can see that. And honestly, I don't have a problem with that. I think that that's great. I think that the cable companies, they're afraid to become this they're afraid to become this dumb pipe, right? They want to be premium content providers, but really, that's what we really want as consumers. We want dumb pipes.
I don't think we know what we're getting into as consumers, because all of our entertainment is supplemented through advertising. Google is supplemented through advertising, and with this thing, it's like, okay, where do we put the ads now? And so,
well, have you watched
either
Hulu?
You charge, I mean, you're talking about 500% increase in what you get charged for internet and that kind of thing if we took away the ad revenue, maybe even more, maybe even like 10,000%.
Well, nobody's saying to take away the ad revenue.
Right,
Hulu,
but I'm
Hulu
saying
has
you,
ads.
You have to build a new model. If people aren't going to be watching TV, quote unquote, anymore, you have to figure out how to charge companies for ads. For these things, and so it's really treacherous ground to be working on, and so it's just an interesting thing. Whereas previously, TV and channels have been exclusive to your TV, and nothing else was there, so there's no distractions around your TV. But now that other things are ending up on the TV, the cable networks. And that the network stations are having to compete with other things than themselves.
Here's an example right now. I just subscribed to Netflix about a month ago.
Right.
I've watched very little television. Well, wait, I'm wrong. I have watched television, but not on a network. Netflix has television shows within Netflix.
Yep.
And I've watched them. Right now, I just got done watching Firefly, which is a fantastic series if you ever get a chance. It ends with a movie. Have you heard of it? Firefly?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, good stuff. And now, that Firefly was created by Joss Whedon, and he has a new show called Dollhouse. So now I'm starting to watch Dollhouse, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Is that the horror thing? The horror. Creepy town?
No.
Okay. There was one that I just had to laugh at. I think it was something on ABC or something.
No. This is pretty good. Josh Whedon, the stuff that he does is always pretty good. But my point being is I don't have time to watch the other TV now that I'm trying to catch up on all these shows. And those are commercial free.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's through Netflix. And I'm only paying $8 a month.
Right.
And I can see myself, if it wasn't for my in-laws who gets the Filipino channels, I can see myself cutting my cable, keeping my internet, and just streaming these shows all the time.
Yeah.
And then
as soon as that happens, these cable companies have no more cash to burn to give you internet. And the internet's prices skyrocket because you're not having that supplement from the companies paying for ads.
I can see that.
And so what happens is this loss of control over what people can do and being able to say, Company X, I can promise you that you're going to have 1 million people see this today. And that's valuable to you.
Yeah.
But now you can't guarantee anything.
They can't say that.
They can't say that at all. So there goes their marketing stuff. And now you're stuck with basically no cash flow from these other places, and that's millions of dollars of revenue for these cable places, you know?
Right.
And
well, the cable companies have room to lower their prices, let's face it. You know, they kind of...
I think you'd be surprised.
You have cable?
I have cable TV, and I have internet.
It's expensive. $100 a month for just cable alone.
Yeah, it depends on how many channels you want. We get the basic channels, $60 a month with internet, and we could get good speed, decent speed internet, right? And most of the entertainment I do is either movies or internet. And I'll get my local news stations. That's kind of why I like having the cable, is because I get my local news on TV, right? But realistically, I could still go on the internet and watch that.
I'd pay a little bit more for just a dumb pipe.
I'm just concerned about the revenue models behind all this. I really am. You right. know, because it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. This may create portal sites again, where when you boot up your TV, you get a portal page where they just have a ton of ads on it. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how that's going to work. I think money
does have to come from somewhere. Yeah. I do get that.
I see the portal page coming back, though. If it comes to TV, people aren't going to mind it so much because you've already... When you sign up, you consent to order cable. You are consenting to watch ads. I mean, that's built in the package. If you're not expecting ads, you're just a complete moron or, I don't know, you have some issues.
You know, the internet's really overhauled our media, hasn't it?
Yeah, because you can plug into anything at any time that you want to versus it being given to you at a particular time. And I don't have to sit down now or set up a DVR to record my show at a particular time. I come and I watch it when I want to, you know, after its release date. And so, yeah, this whole TV thing, man, it's kind of scary because TV affects internet in a really big way, because most TV companies provide internet.
Internet, yeah.
And so if TV gets hit, internet gets hit.
Well, you know, there's DSL.
There is DSL, and those are telecommunications.
Yeah, telecommunications companies. And, you know, if the cable companies try to take you for too much,
yeah,
you know, well then... You know, there's always competition.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it works, though.
I think it's awesome. We're moving into an age where...
You know, if all else fails, we can just watch crappy TV shows for the rest of our lives.
That's right.
Or reality TV.
Oh, yeah. I know. So,
but yeah, well, we kind of got away from the web design things of that, but...
Well, I was trying to get back to that. We're coming to an age where We have to be conscious of how we design.
Yeah,
we're all devices now, mobile phones, big and small, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, not necessarily big and small, because when you think about it, a TV is what, 180 pixels wide, right?
Yeah.
So it's not the size of the screen.
Yeah.
It's really the crispness of what you can get through the screen.
Right.
So this is going to be pretty interesting to see how fonts work on these things. Like,
yeah,
you know, really small text isn't going to cut it on these TVs. So there are a lot of things that you have to think about, you know, as far as design.
Yeah, we have phones, we have browsers.
And thank God at this point for media queries in CSS.
Yeah.
This is going to be huge for this TV movement, this mobile movement, you know. Oh, thank goodness they have that. I would really like to see variables in CSS, but that's pretty big.
Yeah.
I really do think it all comes down to media, or basically what Ethan Marcotte calls responsive design. I think that's the big thing. And I think that's a good note to leave it on.
Yeah.
It was a good podcast.
Cut into an actual hour here, man.
Jeez.
Well, good. Good. That concludes it.
Yep. So, Jonas, where can folks find you?
As usual, you can find me on Twitter at Jive, or you can go to my website, 01productions.com, ZERO1PRODUCTIONS.com/contact. Fill out that form.
Make us some email accounts.
Yeah. Fill out the form. It'll go straight to me. Don't spam me.
Yep. And you can find me on Twitter as @KevinDees, and also on the web, the World Wide Web, as KevinDees.cc. That's DEES.cc. And that site has basically nothing on it at this point, so.
Awesome. And we will be updating our website with, you know, better ways to contact us.
Yep.
Awesome.
All right.
Until next week.
Yep. Thanks for listening to the show, guys.